Dynasty Radio, 1382.
Ah, Uncle Jaseneb, life, liberty, prosperity, yet another decree stolen from you and me. The ancestors of the Nile Valley left us other messages too, like, let food be your medicine, and let your medicine be food.
Why is food and drugs under the same administration? They putting drugs in the food to keep money accumulating now. They like to call it additives and preservatives, slowly killing everybody that purchases it. Can you pronounce what's on the back of the label? Then that shit we need to keep off our dinner table now. The food is what's fueling these diseases, paying rich doctors all these medical fees, but they never cure you, they just keep you in need, cut you open for surgery and let your pockets bleed. See, we got away from what we used to eat. We forgot we were kidnapped and forced to eat meat. We ate from the earth, so we communicated with it. We cut the conversation, now check the situation. See, blacks the leaders in heart disease, cancer. We give them money like pills is the answer. Damn, I'd be wrong if I didn't pass the info. Hormones in the food got you thinking like a nympho. Wonder why all these young girls so thick, like a baseball player. Steroids is it. They got it in the vegetables, the fruit, the meat, and all the fast food they be selling in the street. It's a war going on, and our diet must reflect it. We all got the power, we just gotta direct it. Neglect it, never. Refer to the metal nature that them whole tests the father of medicine.
Peace, fam, and welcome to another edition of Food for Medicine. Food for Medicine is a part of the Revolutionary Radio Network, Dynasty Radio 1382. I am Dr. Phoebe Adiro here, and we are about to get into another fabulously dynamic topic talking about healing foods that we can use for our medicine. But before I get into that, let me take care of some housekeeping. Please check out our website at dynastynetwork.net for a list of times and other shows that we have on Dynasty Radio 1382, and we address other issues and interests of the black community on those shows. So definitely go and support that because we're doing it for you all. And you can also email us at our email address, info@dynastynetwork.net, and there you can, you can pose any comments, concerns, show ideas that you have for us because we love to get feedback from our listening audience for our shows because the shows, you know, we like to give you the information. So absolutely give us some recommendations on what you would like us to bring as far as information to you. And we're always looking for, new ideas, especially on this show, too, just because I'm doing this show. Absolutely, hit up me, Kenya, or the Dynasty Network site if you have show ideas because, this is your show. This is a show for your community. Also, Food for Medicine also has a Facebook page that you should go to. Has the same name, Food for Medicine. Just put it in the search for the Facebook, and you can check us out there. We update it constantly. I have to give that to my sister, Kenya. She is on that, and she always is posting really useful information related to the topics that we do. And even ones that don't deal with the topics that we do. But you can always go there for the latest holistic health information tips and tricks. Also, remember that this is a live call-in show, so if you would like to join the conversation that I am going to start today, then please call in at this number, 646-716-7572, and then press number 1. To raise your hand, and then we will get you, and I'll be able to answer any questions or concerns that you have regarding the topic today. And if not, just call in or listen at your computer and just sit back, relax, and with your pen and pad, of course, because remember, we always tell you on Food for Medicine to have your notepads ready. I bring the information, and it's always coming off top, and it's always coming fast, so you have to make sure that you're taking notes. But, that's okay. Don't feel stressed if you ain't got no, notepad or a pen or a pencil because you can always go back to the archives and listen to this show again because we always have them, recorded so that people can go back and listen. Because I know not everybody's able to listen. Maybe at work, you may be doing something else, and you can't. So we're always here. We got you. Go to the archives. So let's get right into it. So the topic that I chose to do today is called The Truth About Sweeteners. And I wanted to do this topic because, you know, with patients that I have, a lot of times we're making dietary and lifestyle changes. That's what I do. That's what I specialize in. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't formally introduce myself, so let me get that out of the way, too. So those of you who are already on Dynasty and have been with us, you know who I am. But those of you who are new to our Dynasty family, my name is Dr. Afivia Diro, and I'm a naturopathic physician, which means that I use holistic therapies. Well, I'm a family practice doctor, primary care, but I have a focus on using holistic therapies such as acupuncture and herbalism, diet, nutrition, hydrotherapy, you name it. If it's natural, it's holistic, and I know about it, or if I'm trained in it, then I'll do it. Anything that helps to strengthen the body's self-healing power, I do. And my passion is using diet and nutrition for maintaining that optimal health, because I feel that if your diet is jacked up, that no matter what you do on top of that jacked up diet is not going to be as effective, or it's not even going to work at all, and that diet is the foundation for health. If that's not right, then you're not going to be right. So this is why, you know, my sister and I do this show. My sister's not here today with us, but she's with us in spirit. She will be with us in the next show that we do. But I'm holding it down today. But, yeah, that's why we bring you the information each week, because we're passionate about it, and we understand that this is something, you know, that our ancestors made sure was in alignment for us, or that they teach us to have an alignment for ourselves, and, you know, in order for us to have the most optimal health. So that's me, you guys. And now let's get into our topic for today. So the truth about sweeteners. And the reason I was inspired to do this is because, like I said, I deal with diet, lifestyle changes when I have, you know, my patients, you know, wanting to alleviate themselves from different conditions that they come in with. And no matter what it is, it could be rheumatoid arthritis, it could be diabetes, it could be anything, something even like just weight loss. You know, you have to make sure your diet is good and is going to support your efforts to bring your body back into a healthful state. And one of the things that get people caught up a lot of times is the sweets. You know, everybody, you know, for the most part, most people like sweets, right? I love sweets. I was a sugar fiend, you know, back in my day, you know, when I wasn't vegan, when I wasn't health conscious, when I was just, you know, doing what everybody else was doing, eating what everybody else was eating, you know, junk food, sodas, you know, fat foods, you know, all that, all of the above. So sweets is an area where people can get really caught up when it comes to making those healthful changes in their diet. And it's because, you know, sweets, for one thing, sweets are comforting. You know, the brain, the body loves sweets. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. That's a natural affinity that we have for things that are sweet, because sweet things usually have a lot of energy in them. Sugar has a lot of calories. So when you think of the things that are sweet in nature, fruits, you know, some nuts and seeds are sweet, and a lot of times they also have a lot of fat in them. They have a lot of high dense calories in nature, you know. So it draws the body to those high calorie foods that also have, that are supposed to have a lot of nutrients in them. So naturally, you know, animals, and we're animals, you know, they go for the sweet fruits. Monkeys, you know, bears, you know, you name it. They all, you know, like sweet foods. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with liking sweets. But in this society where foods have become, you know, manipulated, and, you know, there are synthetic foods in our environment, all kinds of things in order to, you know, be able to mass produce things, or to make something even more quote unquote palatable or taste better, it compromises the nutritional value of the food. So now we have these very sweet foods that trigger those centers in our brain of, you know, pleasure, and even to the point of addiction, you know, with a lot of these sugary products. But they are empty in calories, they're empty in those antioxidants, they're empty in fiber, they're empty in all of those enzymes and amino acids and things that actually are in the fruit and other naturally sweet foods that were okay with us, you know, that was okay for us to eat. But now we have this empty calorie food that's just as sweet or even sweeter, and we're just eating it and we're consuming it, and it's not nourishing our bodies, and then a vicious cycle starts. The cycle is pleasure centers are triggered in the brain when we eat it, and then the body's not being nourished, it's not being fed, so you're hungry again in 2 hours, so you eat something else that's sugary and sweet, thinking it's going to, you know, satiate that feeling, but it's not. You know, it's never going to do it. It's just going to continue that cycle, and you're going to eat and be hungry, and just get to the point to where sugar is now something you use to medicate yourself because you don't have the comfort. You're miserable. You're at a job that stresses you out. You're in an environment that stresses you out, and you want to eat more because the stress responses make you eat more, and you're eating these calorie-rich, nutrient-deficient foods that aren't serving you. So all that to say, sweets are an area where people find the hardest time either giving up those not-so-healthy foods and then finding alternatives or things that they can replace or use instead of, you know, those not-so-healthful sweeteners. So with that being said, I wanted to do this show today because I wanted to provide some assistance in helping our community, you know, make better educated and informed decisions when it comes to healthfully sweetening their favorite foods so that we're no longer taken advantage of. So a lot of times, another thing I want to mention, too, is that a lot of these products I'm going to talk about today or these sweeteners are in a lot of those food products that are labeled as diet foods and healthy foods, low calorie, low fat. You know, a lot of these sweeteners that are not so good that I'm going to talk about, they are marketed to us as being a better alternative if we're trying to go on this healthful journey. And then we get bamboozled because they're not healthy at all. They're chemicals, and they create even more damage than just, say, table sugar that, you know, is actually, you know, it's a bad product, but it's not as bad as some of these things that have been created to make things even more sweet and addicting. So that's pretty much what I wanted to do. I wanted to give our community better choices, you know, expose us to better choices and the information as far as the bad ones are concerned, the bad products, so that we can make decisions that are more helpful. So let's get into some of these today. I'm going to start out with talking about some of the not not so helpful, but just the bad sweeteners, the ones that are going to, you know, degenerate the body and create all kinds of disease in the body if we continue to consume them. And these are in a lot of those diet foods. So the first one, I hope that most people are, you know, conscious about and are not consuming anymore, but I know that there are still people that are consuming it. So the first one that I have on my list is aspartame, which is horrible. Aspartame, aspartame, you can call it whichever one. I've heard people pronounce it both ways. But it's a really common chemical sweetener that's used in, like, diet sodas. It's used in diet foods, low-calorie foods. It's usually in those. But some people report, I don't want to say some. A lot of people actually report having all of these reactions to these foods. But a lot of times they don't even know their reactions to the food. They usually just, you know, they're drinking it. And you're probably so used to drinking it every day that you don't even realize that, you know, you're having headaches now. You know, a lot of people report having migraines, you know, or feeling just kind of ill and unwell after ingesting anything that contains aspartame. And, you know, studies have found that when mixed with common food coloring ingredients, so let's say, you know, it's in a yogurt, you know, in a sugar-free yogurt or a sugar-free candy that's blue or red or, you know, that has, like, you know, some kind of dye in it, which most prepackaged foods usually do have dyes in them to color the food. Studies have shown that when aspartame is mixed with those coloring ingredients, it actually can become toxic to brain cells. So aspartame is a neurotoxin, which means it actually it creates toxicity to our neurons, to our nervous system. And that's why people, when they ingest it, that they get headaches, because headaches, especially migraines, are dealing with the nervous system. You know, people will feel nauseous and things because the body is not, because the nervous system is irritated, you know, from that offending agent. So researchers are also finding that drinking about two diet sodas a day, and a lot of people drink more than that a day of diet soda, especially if it's something you become addicted to. But just drinking two of those sodas can actually lead to a 500% greater increase in your waist size. So a lot of these diet products, diet foods, sugar-free foods and things are containing this chemical sweetener, aspartame, but it's shown scientifically that if you consume it on a regular basis, that it will actually cause you to gain weight. Furthermore, they've done animal and human studies that suggest that aspartame actually increases your blood glucose levels, similarly to sugar. So it's not doing anything different than the sugar that you're trying to get away from, which is crazy because they're marketing it this way. And that actually explains why that there's association between drinking diet soda and diabetes. There have been a lot of studies done that, you know, show, because they used to market diet sodas to diabetics, you know, and people that have insulin sensitivity, because they said it was safer to eat or to drink than those beverages sweetened with sugar. But it's not true. They actually have shown in studies, you know, and it was hidden for a long time because, you know, people were trying to make money off of this diet industry, that it actually creates diabetic conditions in people. It actually spikes your blood sugar. It actually, you know, it decreases your insulin sensitivity. So these products are doing absolutely what they say that they're trying to help you not to happen, or not to happen in your body. So, so just take these into consideration. If you are still drinking diet sodas, this is what's in it. And if you're trying to figure out why your weight loss goals haven't been met and you're eating these diet products, drinking these diet drinks, that is a large part of, or a large reason why you are finding it difficult to meet your goals. And another thing, too, there is a harmful breakdown product in your body when aspartame is actually metabolized by your body, well, the part that can be metabolized. It actually breaks down into formaldehyde. And formaldehyde is known absolutely to cause cancer. You can Google many studies. Like, you can just Google formaldehyde and cancer, and then you'll find all these studies on how it creates those conditions in the body that allow cancer to flourish. So aspartame is just bad. It's a neurotoxin. It breaks down into harmful metabolites in the body. The body can barely even process it, and it just creates more toxicity. So absolutely no aspartame. Don't buy it. Don't buy, you know, make sure if you're buying these health foods, weight loss foods, read the labels. And if there's any kind of inkling that there's an artificial sweetener in it, especially aspartame, don't eat it, because it's not going to help you reach your goals. And then it'll just degenerate your body. Yes, so that's all I have to say about aspartame. Bad, bad, bad. Most people should know that by now, but I just have to say it because we're not all exposed to the same information. The next thing I have on my list is agave nectar. Now, I've talked about agave nectar before on other shows, and I've talked about how it's not as fabulous as what everybody thinks it is, but, you know, I have to talk about it again and talk about it, you know, deliberately, because I'm doing a show about sweetness. Now, I'm going to burst a lot of people's bubble, because especially in the vegan world, I'm vegan. I actually have never bought agave in my life. I've never actually purchased agave to use. I've always had it in other things. Like, if I've gone out to a vegan restaurant or something, people use it in other things. And then, of course, in any vegan food that you buy that's already made, you know, like desserts and things like that, little raw vegan desserts, they usually use agave in a lot of those. So, but I've never actually bought it for myself, and I'm glad I didn't, because after I started researching and learning more about eating more healthfully, I learned that agave is not, at least agave the way that it's made, the way that it's mass-produced and made industrially, it's not the health food that we think it is. And while your health food stores, you know, likely stocks agave like crazy, and it, you know, it's just best to keep agave out of your shopping cart. Don't give in to the hype. You know, many agave nectars actually consist of 70 to 90% more fructose than even high fructose corn syrup or sugar. So the fact that this product contains more fructose than high fructose corn syrup that should be an indicator that this is not the best product for you. Now, and I'm going to talk about fructose, too, and high fructose corn syrup. You know, waistlines have been growing ever since high fructose corn syrup sneaked into the food scene about 30 years ago. And it was actually created in Japan. I've had an instructor tell me that, or just kind of say in passing that he believed that, you know, that high fructose corn syrup is, you know, Japan's answer to Hiroshima. Because, you know, okay, so you're going to go and kill a whole bunch of my people. All right, so we'll make this, you know, fabulously sweet product that you can use cheap in all of your food, but it will kill you slowly and it will degenerate you. It won't be something dramatic. It won't be something that happened today, tomorrow, you know, a couple of years from now, but it'll happen later, you know, and then you'll just be degenerating, you know, for the rest of your life if you continue to consume it. So that's just, you know, a little side note about that. But it was created in Japan, actually, and it's just a really cheap way for manufacturers to add a flavor that is addicting to the food and makes it taste really good. With a slightly higher fructose level than sugar, high fructose corn syrup does most of its damage. And this is just fructose, refined fructose in general. You know, the reason that the high fructose does the most damage is because it's added in all the food that we eat, even salad dressings, even ketchup. Like, read the ingredients, you know, read the ingredients that, you know, of the things that you use kind of like commonly. It's in there, all these fructose, these refined fructose products. And now agave is kind of taking the place of high fructose corn syrup in that end. And why high fructose corn syrup and just refined fructose in general is so damaging is because it's preferentially stored as fat in the liver. So the liver actually does a lot dealing with sugar metabolism as well. We know our pancreas does a lot for our sugar metabolism. Well, it releases insulin. The pancreas releases insulin, and that is a big part of how the cells of our body are to take up sugar. But the liver actually does a lot for us in breaking down sugar molecules in our body as well. And high fructose corn syrup or refined fructose products like agave nectar, when they go into the liver, they're stored as fat in the liver. And this makes people who consume a lot of these high fructose products resistant to a hormone called leptin, because the liver is now not able to process the fat. This hormone called leptin actually increases appetite. Leptin is a hormone that's increased when you are in need of nourishment. So if you're taking in calorie-dense but nutrient-deficient foods, your liver's going to pack away all this sugar as fat, but your body's not going to feel nourished, so it's going to increase this hormone leptin so that you can eat more. And if you're in a mindset to where you're going to just eat these high fructose-laden foods or these agave-laden foods, then you're not going to be nourished. You're just going to keep eating. You're going to keep eating. You're going to keep eating because it's a vicious cycle. I'm not being nourished, so I'm going to eat. I'm not being nourished, so I'm going to eat. So if you keep putting in the non-nourishing foods that's sweet and increasing your appetite, then that's just going to create what? An obesity problem. And that's what's happened to us. So that's the problem with high fructose corn syrup and refined fructose product like agave nectar. Agave nectar is just high fructose corn syrup that's being marketed to the health, the holistic health community, which is really, really horrible. Agave nectar is probably one of the worst sweeteners on the market, period. Like, that's my professional opinion out there, because I've done a lot of research on sweeteners, trust, because I love sweets too, just like anybody else. And I've looked for every sweetener. I've tried every sweetener. I just never bought agave. I guess that's just my head, you know, kind of directing me in the right direction. I don't know. Maybe I listened to my intuition on that one. But I've tried all of them, and then I've researched all of them, and agave nectar is just not the business. You know, it's deceptive because it's been marketed by, you know, it's been marketed as a healthy alternative. Even though it doesn't actually cause a big blood sugar spike, I mean, like if they were to test your blood sugar right after you consume agave nectar, the way the table sugar does, it doesn't cause the same kind of spike. But agave's high fructose level just damaged the liver's ability to process. And it just gets packed away as fat. It just gets packed away as fat. And, you know, it also, because the liver is now not able to metabolize the lipids or the fats that are created by the sugar, it also increases the lipids in your blood. What does that lead to? High cholesterol, increasing the risk of heart attack, arteriosclerotic plaques. All of those things have increased with the advent of the creation of high fructose corn syrup and refined fructose products. So over the past 30 years, we have seen an increase in cardiovascular disease because of these highly refined fructose products. And like I said, insulin resistance is absolutely created by these fructose products, which is a risk factor for diabetes, as well as non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. There's a lot of increased liver cancers and liver inflammatory problems that, you know, lead to these degeneration of the liver cells. And that is caused by excessive sugar. People don't think about sugar when we talk about the liver, but the liver absolutely, absolutely is harmed by sugar. I would say, if not more so than the pancreas. You know, the pancreas is absolutely important with sugar metabolism, but the liver is also important. The liver is the fat metabolizer, and when we have excess sugar in our body, it gets turned into fat, and that's why the liver gets overworked, because we're eating too much of this refined sugar. And when there's a lot of fructose coming into the liver, it just really taxes it, and it fatigues it, and eventually it won't function as well. Everything is blocked up, and this decreases the ability of the liver to detoxify the body. Remember, the liver is one of the largest detoxification organs in our body. All the blood has to filter through the liver, and the liver neutralizes toxins and takes out those things that shouldn't be there. Well, if you have it overburdened with excess sugar and, you know, it's creating all of this fat to be stored away because it's not being used as energy, then the liver can't do that. So then you get a toxicity problem, too. Cleanses won't go the way that you need them to go because you are eating too much sugar. This is one of the reasons that on most cleanses that you do, eating refined carbohydrates or even just, well, refined carbohydrates like sugar is usually eliminated on those kinds of cleanses, but also things like breads, wheat products, pasta, all those things are simple sugars that just add to the burden that the liver has to do because those flours, those wheat products turn into sugar in the body. Still a simple carbohydrate. Doesn't have fiber, doesn't have minerals and vitamins to help slow down the breakdown of that sugar or to slow down the release of that sugar, so it just gets released into the blood. And the liver can't handle that when it's already overburdened. So agave nectar, nah. Nah, nah, nah. Just use something else. And I'm going to give you a better option in a little bit. High fructose corn syrup, of course, absolutely not. Like I mentioned, be wary of these ingredients in your salad dressings, in your yogurts. It's even in bread. If you buying, you know, kind of like a mass, like industrial produced bread, like Nature's Way has high fructose corn syrup in it. I'm sorry. All these brown breads that you can buy at Walmart, it's in everything. It's even in cheese. Cheese products and things that aren't sweet. You know, just read the ingredients. Go to the store one day and read the condiment, the ingredients on the back of the condiments, like ketchup, like I said, mustard, salad dressings, those Kraft brand salad dressings. High fructose corn syrup is like the first ingredient in those. I used to eat those when I was in college, and I thought they were the best. But when I started reading labels, I was like, oh, shoot. Like, this has nothing but sugar. It has high fructose corn syrup and sugar in it. And, you know, I thought it was great, but that's why I thought it was great, because I was beginning addicted to it. It was like they laced it with crack. They might as well have laced it with crack. So really read those ingredients, because they hide high fructose corn syrup in everything. And now agave. So the next thing I have on my list is sucralose. This is something else that I feel a lot of people should already be hip to, as not being a good sweetener to add to foods. But like I said, some people may not know, and they may not know what they're eating. Sucralose is better known by its brand name, Splenda. There's plenty of people in my family that use Splenda. There's probably people in my family that use Splenda today, and I know that there are people in your family or you that still use Splenda, because Splenda was like this whole. Splenda came out when everybody was kind of getting hip to aspartame and all the other crazy chemical sweeteners, and it was supposed to be this better choice. And then you could be, you know, you're able to bake with it and all this other stuff. People love Splenda, you know, especially in the diabetic population, people that are struggling with diabetes, looking for something to bake with and sweeten their teas and do something else with their foods with. Splenda was always used. And it's not better, you know. And also Splenda is, you know, it's sold under other generic names as well, but it's sucralose. If you see sucralose, it's Splenda. It's the same thing. Now, sucralose in its production, it originates with sugar, like, you know, like a cane sugar, but the end product is anything but natural. It's not good. Splenda is found in tens of thousands of processed foods, sold in about 90 different countries. So they're not even eating it just in America. They're eating it in Europe. You know, other countries have it in their foods. And many of those foods that it's marketed in throughout the world, including here, is to those who are trying to manage their weight or who have diabetes, which is a big reason, like I said, why Splenda is like on diabetic food lists, you know, people adding it to their food to sweeten their food, which is crazy. There's a lot of research showing that not only does Splenda tend to worsen both the problem of weight gain, but it also is associated with the development of diabetes. Crazy, right? There's actually a website you can go to that I found. I found it actually a few years ago. It's called thetruthaboutsplenda.com. And you can actually go to that site and look up all the different reports that, you know, consumer complaints about Splenda, the different research that's been done about Splenda consumption and all of that, many of which, you know, if you read the studies on the website, and if you just Google Splenda and you look at studies that you find on there, the reactions that people have to Splenda actually mimic other health conditions. Some of the most, you know, some of them very common, you know, and then some of the common symptoms that people report are things like gastrointestinal distress, you know, problems with the digestive system, seizures, dizziness, migraines, blurred vision, allergic reactions, blood sugar increases, and weight gain, right? Wasn't that what Splenda was supposed to be helping you not to have? But it's actually causing it. So, you know, so a lot of people have these things going on, digestive disturbances, maybe having seizures, dizziness, migraines, blurred vision, and even allergic reactions, but they don't correlate it to the fact that they're eating this chemical that's called a sweetener in their food. I read an article in the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health, and it reveals, you know, really, it was a very extensive list of safety concerns to sucralose, and it was ridiculous. I'm like, how can they even give this to people? But, hey, that's how, you know, these folks do. Sucralose, not just including just overall toxicity of the body, the fact that this is a toxin that you're eating, it leads to DNA damage. So it actually can, you know, denature cellular DNA, which leads to aging, which leads to cell degeneration, you know, which leads to organ dysfunction or the organ not being able to function. It leads to heightened carcinogenic potential, which means that it gives you a greater risk of developing cancer, tumors in the body. And then the list just goes on and on. I mean, you can go to that, you know, The Truth About Splenda and find, you know, more easily laid out information. But there's just a laundry list of basically, in a nutshell, how it creates cell DNA damage and how it creates carcinogens and how toxic it is. It's just a toxin. And, in fact, Splenda is not safe to cook with in general. They always talk about, oh, it's great for baking because other, you know, chemical sweeteners weren't so great to bake with. Splenda was touted this great baking alternative to sweeten your food. And it's not. It's even worse when it's heated, because the chemicals react to not only the cookware that's metal, you know, the metal cookware it reacts with, but it also causes the chemical compounds within it to, like the heat causes it to break down into these T tissue-damaging metabolites. And then these create all these crazy free radicals in the body. Chlorine is released into the body from when eating Splenda because it's actually manufactured using chlorine. And chlorine is a very toxic chemical. Everybody knows chlorine is toxic because you can't swim in a pool, you know, for a few hours after you treated a pool with it because it'll damage you. So, I mean, now you're ingesting chlorine. You know, we talk about chlorine being in our water and that being so damaging. So this is something that you're eating directly, you know, putting in your food in tablespoons. So cooking with Splenda is not better. It actually makes it even more worse. It actually, you know, it stimulates that chemical reaction that creates those really horrible toxic compounds. It's just bad. Splenda is horrible, and it should not be used by anybody. It should not be consumed by anybody or anything. And it also increases your blood sugar, and it increases your body's propensity to hold on to and gain weight. Yes, so that's sucralose or Splenda. No. Sugar. All right, so I have to talk about sugar because sugar is kind of like where all of these crazy foods have stemmed from because people are trying to get away from sugar, but then they're making these chemicals. Sugar is actually not as bad as those toxic chemicals, but it's still not the greatest thing to consume every day, but it's, you know, it's the thing that came out of the sugar cane that people are trying to imitate. So, you know, sugar is made up of 50% glucose, and about the other 50% of it is the fructose. Now, sugar does spike your blood sugar, of course. We know that, you know, and it does go to the liver. It does make the liver work to process it, and it can, in excess, you know, overburden the liver, overburden the pancreas, and lead to those inflammatory or those metabolic conditions. It's the sheer quantity that we're eating that's actually driving us into obesity and other diseases. Because people used to eat sugar, you know, back in the day, but just not as much as we do. You know, about even like 100 years ago, folks ate the equivalent of maybe one tablespoon, maybe, of sugar a day. Now people eat up to 7 to 8 tablespoons a day. And that's like, you know, that's probably on the low end. I'm sure we eat more than that now because now we have the high fructose corn syrup and other refined sugars, you know, to kind of up that quotient. And then we're putting it in things that aren't considered sweet. It's probably more like 9-10 tablespoons a day because sugar is hidden so much in our foods. But yeah, we used to have sugar and use it to sweeten, you know, medicines and drinks and things like that. But we didn't eat it as much as we do now. And of course, it's not as highly refined. It wasn't as highly refined back then as it is now. But sugar in itself is very dehydrating. You know, it pulls fluids from the tissues, and then along with the fluids, it also leaches minerals and vitamins. So we're eating these sugary products, but, you know, and then they're pleasing to the brain centers. They're full of calories, maybe some minerals perhaps, but they're doing more harm than that little bit of good. They are actually robbing the body of those things. And remember, I talked about dehydration on a couple shows, and dehydration plus malnutrition or poor nutrition lead to many, many different inflammatory syndromes. For example, pain is worsened when you're dehydrated and when you're mineral deficient. Soreness and stiffness in the body happens because, one, the tissues are not as flexible and resilient as they were when they were hydrated, and then the body is not able to move toxins through. It's not able to get rid of waste in the cells or cellular waste the way that it would if it was properly hydrated. And that leads to stiffness and pain and just a sensation in the body that's just not well. Like, you know when your body is full of toxins. You do. You know, it just leads to things like constipation, which is an obvious, obvious symptom that your body is not eliminating waste properly. But the cells on their level, if they're not eliminating waste properly because of dehydration, then your body will just not feel, you won't feel vital. You won't feel you know, you won't have energy because the cells are just kind of brought down by not being able to cleanse themselves. And then the malnutrition just makes it to where you can't carry out proper biological functions because you don't have the zinc, you don't have the calcium needed, you don't have the potassium. You know, you need all these different minerals from the foods that you eat in order to carry out metabolism, in order to carry out proper waste removal, in order to carry out, you know, all those different things that allow the body to function properly. So you need it. And sugar, when you consume it in excess, it just really robs the body of that. Anemia is heavily associated with too much sugar consumption. And a lot of people don't think about that. But, I mean, anemia is a mineral deficiency. It's a deficiency problem. And a lot of people have it in this country who aren't even, you know, they don't look malnourished like how people like to depict folks in other countries, you know, where they're skinny and emaciated and, you know, eyes are sunken in and things like that. But here people are also malnourished and overweight, malnourished and looking very plump. But, you know, it's because you're putting on all this excess weight from, you know, these empty calories that don't have any nutrition. So you can have overweight people who are also anemic. That's what you see in this country. And then also sugar makes the body very acidic, which can open the way for a host of different diseases to manifest. And most people, especially you listening to this kind of show, know that, you know, an acidic body is just a breeding ground for disease, especially things like autoimmune disease, arthritis, any kind of inflammatory disorder, cancer, neurodegenerative diseases, to name a few. All of that can manifest and flourish in an acidic body, and sugar is extremely acid-forming. So, you know, excess sugar, that's just not something that we need to continue to do or to add into our diet. Just to give you, I've heard so much from patients and just from my own research in my own journey of eating better about sugarcane sweeteners, you know, all of the different kinds of sugar sweeteners. You know, making what we know as table sugar from sugarcane can range from a relatively simple to a, like, several multi-step process. And the final result varies depending on the specific steps in that process. So, like, for example, light and dark brown sugars or powdered sugars, granulated white sugars, you know, they're all highly refined. They're all highly refined sugars. But, you know, here are a few examples of the not-so-refined cane sugar products that, you know, different people use, especially like in the health food communities, and they are a lesser of the evils of the whole cane sugar product list. So the light brown, dark sugar, the light or the dark brown sugars, powdered granulated white sugar, those are the really highly refined ones. So these are not so refined cane sugar products that, you know, people can use in moderation, let's say as a bridge to not using sugar anymore, or maybe very, very occasionally using it in things to sweeten their food. And this is, of course, if you're not sensitive to sugar. There are a lot of people that are sensitive to sugarcane products, no matter how refined or unrefined it is. I'm one of them. I eat sugar in anything. I don't care how much it is, how little it is. I'll break out. You know, I'll feel like crap. I will feel the effects of the sugar. But other people who maybe aren't so sensitive to it and can handle it and maybe like putting a tablespoon or so in a baked product, these products may be better to use in moderation if you are going to sweeten something on occasion, okay? I keep saying that because I don't want people to think this is just leeway for you to use, you know, these kind of sugar products willy-nilly. So, yes. So here are some sugar, some not-so-refined sugar products. So molasses, that's the first thing on my list because I actually like molasses. Unlike other sugarcane sweeteners, it contains significant amounts of vitamins and minerals, and I like that, you know. There are different kinds of molasses. So the first molasses that are labeled first molasses is actually left over when sugarcane juice is boiled. It's cooled, and then it's removed off of the crystals, the sugar crystals. The blackstrap molasses that I really like is made from the third boiling of the sugar syrup, and it is the most nutritious molasses that you can get, and it contains substantial amounts of calcium, magnesium, potassium, and iron. It usually has a good array of nutrients in it still. So if somebody's going to use a sweetener that's a cane sugar-based sweetener, this would be the one that I would recommend you use because it has the best nutrient panel. Now, remember, molasses has a very, very strong taste. So those people who are trying to make something to use it to sweeten something, just make sure that you take into account that molasses flavor is very strong. So I think molasses would be a good thing to use to mix with maybe other helpful sweeteners so that you can get to the sweetness that you want ultimately in the dish. So that's just something you can take into consideration. Now we're getting into the different types of evaporated sugars or dried sugars. There's one called rapedura. I never know how to say it because I don't really hear other people say that much, but rapadura or rapedura, R-A-P-A-D-U-R-A, that's the name of it. It's actually a Portuguese name, so I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but It's basically just unrefined dried cane juice. That's what it is. Probably the least refined of all the cane sugar products, and it's made simply by cooking the juice that's been pressed from the sugar cane, and it's very concentrated. And then, you know, they dry it. To get it into the granules traditionally, or they can pour it into a mold and dry it into a brick, a sugar brick, which is then, you know, when you want to use it, they shave off the sugar that they're going to use. So that one is, like, the least refined. And then you have the sucanat, which stands for sugarcane natural. It's actually just kind of, like, a little acronym for that. And it's very similar to the Portuguese sugar, the rapadura. It is made by mechanically extracting sugarcane juice, which is then, you know, it's heated and then it's cooled until tiny brown little crystals form onto it. So it's still brown. It still has a lot of the molasses in it. And it's, again, not as refined as, like, your white sugars. Then you have the turbinado sugar. Turbinado is often confused with the sucanat, but the two are different. Turbinado and sucanat are technically different products. After the sugarcane is pressed to the extract juice, then the juice is boiled, it's cooled, and allowed to crystallize in the granules, like the sucanat. Next, to make turbinado, the granules are refined even more to a light tan color by washing them in this, it's a centrifuge. So a centrifuge is just like a machine that spins extremely, extremely fast, very fast. And what it does is it removes what they call impurities from the surface. But really what's being removed is a lot of the minerals from the molasses and things like that. So turbinado is therefore lighter in color because more of the molasses has been removed and the minerals have been removed. It still has some minerals, but it has way less than molasses and a lot less than the sucanat sugar. And then you have the evaporated cane juice, which is essentially a finer, lighter colored version of turbinado sugar, but it's still less refined than table sugar, of course. And it may contain, like, very trace amounts of the minerals, but it's just, you know, they're just continuing to refine more and more of that molasses out of the sugar to make it more fine and to make it not as strong tasting as the more darker, less refined sugars. So those are your sugar products there. So you have the molasses, the sucanat, the turbinado, evaporated cane juices. Those are all maybe the less refined sugar products that you can use very occasionally if you need to. All right, so let's get into the more helpful sweeteners. I'm going to talk about those. So the first thing I have on my list is brown rice syrup and things like barley malt syrups. Your malt syrups, your brown rice syrups, these are made when either the rice or the grass grains like barley are cultured with enzymes, and those enzymes break it down. So these are basically like the enzymes you use to make fermented food. So they basically sprout the rice or sprout the barley, and then, you know, they may add more of those probiotic enzymes to it, or I'm sorry, not probiotic, but like those digestive enzymes to it. Or a lot of times, you know, if they're making it in small batches, more holistically, they'll let the fermentation process take on its own. But anyway, the fermentation and the enzymes, they break down the starches in the grains, in the rice or the barley. And then the resulting liquid that forms when that fermentation process takes place is cooked down to a thick syrup, you know, which is about half as sweet as white sugar. So it's not sweet like sugar at all. And it has kind of like a mild, I'm trying to think how to describe it. It has, brown rice syrup has kind of like a butterscotch type flavor, kind of like a toffee-like flavor. And the barley malt syrup is similar. And it's definitely not as sweet as sugar. You have to use more of it to sweeten your food than sugar. But then it has that flavor that, you know, depending on what you're making, you may not want. But if you don't care, you know, it's a good sweetener to add, especially if you're not a big sweets person. It's composed of about 50% complex carbohydrates, which break down more slowly in the bloodstream than simple carbohydrates like white sugar, you know, or your agave nectars and things like that. And what that results in is a less dramatic spike in blood glucose levels, making it a better choice for people who are insulin sensitive or even some diabetics who are more controlled and don't have as bad of an insulin sensitivity. A lot of people that do have diabetes are able to eat brown rice syrup and barley malt syrup because it is 50% or more less sweet than sugar. So that's a great alternative sweetener. It's definitely something that a lot of people have to get used to because it's not as sweet and because of that distinct flavor. But some people love it. It's either you love or you hate barley malt syrup or brown rice syrup. I actually like both of them. It's just depending on what I can get my hands on. Some places have brown rice syrup, some places have barley malt. So you can maybe, you know, try some and see if you like it. So the next health sweetener I have on here is my favorite and the one that I recommend the most, and that's stevia. Stevia is the safest sweetener, period. Like, that's it. Now, I'm talking about whole leaf stevia, green stevia powder, not that white stuff, even though, you know, and I'm going to talk about that in just a second, but yes, stevia leaf. And the plant is actually called stevia. And I always mess up the name because it's long. Stevia rubidiana, and it has been used. That's the botanical name. And it has been used for more than stevia has been used a long time by ancient societies, or by elder societies. You know, like in South America, and stevia is actually has been used for about 1,500 years by ancient societies in South America and the Caribbean, but mostly in South America, and they call it the sweet herb. And the leaves have been traditionally used for hundreds of years in both Brazil, Paraguay, and other South American countries to sweeten local teas and medicines that were made and to make, you know, just, you know, sweet-tasting foods. And today it's used as a alternative sweetener that's safe for even diabetics to use. It's absolutely safe for diabetics to use and other sugar-sensitive individuals. It's safe for all those people to use because it's a green, you know. And like I mentioned, in its natural bulk herb form, the green whole leaf powder, you know, such as ground stevia leaf powders, it is still considered a green. So therefore, like any other green, it's going to contain vitamins and minerals and other helpful constituents that, you know, we need in our diet. And you can add that to your food, and it'll make it nice and sweet. Nowadays, you know, of course, society has a way of just really just corrupting and perverting things. And that's just the nature of the, you know, the Eurocentric society. Nowadays, there are many stevia extracts and products that, you know, some taste better than the others, and some, of course, are more healthful than others. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of products that promote that they are a stevia product, but they'll mix it with other things. You don't read the label, and you just see stevia, you know. If you don't read the label, you may not see that they're actually mixing the stevia with other artificial chemical sweeteners to make a semi-stevia product, you know, and market it as natural stevia. For example, Truvia, that Truvia brand, it mixes stevia with, like, sugar alcohols, I think. And sugar alcohols are not the worst thing. I actually am going to talk about sugar alcohols. But, you know, a lot of people can't have them. Some people are sensitive to them. Diabetics actually shouldn't overconsume sugar alcohols because it can actually lead to rises in blood sugar. And then people who have liver damage, liver cancer, any kind of hepatitis, they shouldn't consume sugar alcohols, you know, of course, because of the sugar alcohol in your liver, but your liver is already stressed and the liver processes alcohol out of the blood because it is a toxin, right? So Truvia is an example of those products that mix stevia with other things. There are also some brands that mix stevia with table sugar, you know, like with white sugar or turbinado and things like that. And for people who are diabetic or people that are insulin sensitive, they can't have that. I know that raw brand sugar does that. They have, like, stevia products, and they mix it with the raw or what they call raw turbinado or whatever kind of sugar that they usually use for that raw sugar brand. They do that. They have a stevia product. So, you know, you can't give those products to people who need to not eat any sugar. So this is not just the only products that do that. There are many products that have that mix of stevia and other things. Some products even mix stevia and sucralose. You know, I think there's even some Splenda products out there that say, oh, this is stevia, like they're marketing it as stevia or just having stevia on the bag, and people may just say, oh, this is stevia, or this is stevia here, but it's actually stevia and Splenda or stevia and sucralose. So just make sure you're reading the labels. I recommend the best thing you can possibly do is just get ground stevia leaves. Just get the green powder and use that, because that is absolutely 100% stevia. And you don't have to worry about anything else being it. And then I have to say that we need to think critically about things that are white. You know, any kind of processed food that is white is usually not right. Because there are not very many things in nature that are stark white like that, other than maybe some coconut meat, some young coconut meat, and maybe, you know, certain flowers and stuff. But for the most part, you know, especially if it comes from a green plant. I mean, if it's stark white, that tells you something about it, right? So if you're buying white stevia powder or this, like, clear stevia liquid extracts and stuff, extracts are okay. If it's like a tincture of a stevia leaf, you know, and it's just stevia and, like, alcohol or, you know, or glycerin or something like that. But for the most part, I recommend eating whole foods. Just get the bulk stevia leaf powder, you know. But, of course, work with what you can. You know, get what you can. Look on Amazon.com. Order your own stevia powder, you know, that kind of thing. So what was else I needed to say about that? Oh, and then just know, you know, you can see on packaging of foods, let's say, like, if it's a food product that has stevia in it, that's reporting that it is stevia, make sure to read those too. Like, oh, this product is sweetened with stevia. Read the label, because it will also list things a lot of times like natural flavors, quote unquote, natural flavors, which can include a whole sort of questionable ingredients that, you know, undermine even the little bit of stevia that is in there. So it's unhelpful in its entirety. So just make sure you're being conscious of that. Oh, also, too, when using stevia, remember that you should never overuse stevia, like just the natural stevia, because it has a very strong aftertaste that you'll be able to taste if you use too much. And this is a good ingredient. That's why stevia is a really good ingredient to use in combination with other helpful sweeteners like molasses or, you know, like maple syrup or something like that, or honey, to just kind of boost the sweetness to the level that you would like, but not to use to flavor a whole dish. You wouldn't want to sweeten a whole sweet dish with just stevia, because you'll get that aftertaste and it won't be very good. So just use it in combination to get to that sweet factor that you want without having to add excess sugar products. And only have, let's see, only have three more things. The sugar alcohols, again, they're popular as an alternative sweetener. So things like the xylitol, anytime you see the xylitols or the itols, xylitol, sorbitol, erythritol, when you see that in products, those are sugar alcohols. They're natural sweeteners made through a fermentation process of corn or sugar cane. So they just ferment it down into a sugary alcohol. So it's not bitter or like acrid like regular alcohol. It's, you know, a sweetened, it's like right before it becomes liquor. You know, they ferment it down to that. And they contain a lot of fewer calories than many of the other sweeteners, like, you know, table sugar or honey. But they have more calories than stevia, of course, because it has more of the sugars from the fruit that they ferment. They also have a long they actually kind of make a cooling sensation in your mouth if you eat them. If you've ever chewed gum or something or brushed your teeth with toothpaste or had like a sugar-free candy that was sweetened with sugar alcohol, it kind of leaves that cooling sensation in your mouth. A really good thing that they found that these sugar alcohols do, they actually have been found to prevent cavities. So you'll find xylitol being used to sweeten a lot of these holistic natural toothpaste. You'll probably see like those brands that are like xylitol brand or, you know, Xylofresh and all these other things because it helps with preventing cavities. So that's a good thing about this sweetener. So this is another thing you could use maybe in combination with stevia and like other things. Like other natural sweeteners to just kind of increase the sweetness quotient of your dish, but you wouldn't want to sweeten the whole dish with this again because it has kind of a weird aftertaste if you do it too much. Again, with the overconsumption, you don't want to overconsume sugar alcohols because it can actually irritate your digestive system. It won't kill you, but it'll just make your stomach upset if you try to eat too much of it. So just be conscious about that. Also, make sure you're buying organic versions of your sugar alcohols, like xylitol or erythritol, because if they use corn or sugar cane, you want to make sure that they're not GMO, make sure they're not using, you know, pesticide-laden products in their sweeteners, because then you'll be getting that. The next thing is honey. Honey is another more healthful sweetener option. While honey does contain more fructose, than other sweeteners. It also contains a bounty of body-defending antioxidants, enzymes, amino acids, minerals, and then, of course, local honey, as I've mentioned before on other shows, has been shown to help alleviate allergy symptoms for the season in that area. And then honey also has a low glycemic index, which means that you can add it to your foods without it spiking your blood sugar and then also causing those blood sugar drops or crashes later in the day, which happens when you consume highly refined sugary products or highly refined fructose products like agave and high fructose corn syrup. And the last thing I have on my list that is my favorite and, you know, it's one of the healthful sweeteners is maple syrup. I love maple syrup. You know, all types of sweeteners should be used in moderation. But if you want to turn to real maple syrup to sweeten your food, it's actually a very naturally sweet, highly nutritious treat that you can really give yourself. It's lower in calories. It's packed with more minerals than even honey, actually. Honey has a lot of antioxidants and things in it, but it's actually packed with more vitamins and minerals than even honey. And it's definitely more nutrient-dense than sugar, you know. And it can even help the body ward off some diseases if you use it as a sweetener, you know, when you're eating your sweets in moderation. There was a 2011 pharmaceutical study that I read that was done at the University of Rhode Island. And actually, they were looking at about 54 previously unknown herbal compounds in maple syrup. And many of those compounds, well, actually all of them, all 54 of them were anti-inflammatory compounds. And they exhibited antioxidant properties as well. So maple syrup has antioxidant and anti-inflammatory compounds in it. And ironically, two of the antioxidants they found were later discovered to fight enzymes that lead to type 2 diabetes. So while I wouldn't recommend that diabetics just eat maple syrup, you know, all day, every day, but I definitely think that some that are not as sensitive, not as insulin sensitive, not as or their diabetes is more controlled, that they can use it sparingly, you know, to sweeten food. Just make sure that you are watching your blood sugar. Make sure that you're monitoring yourself. Listen to your body, because everybody's body is different. Your body may react one way to maple syrup, and another person's may react different. Some people can handle it, some people can't. So just make sure that you're using all sweeteners in moderation. But this is just a more helpful one that you can use instead of table sugars, agave, or high fructose corn syrup, or those chemical sweeteners. Just a note here, when you're buying maple syrup, just make sure the label reads 100% maple syrup. Do not buy imitation maple syrup, because that's crap. You do not want to buy high fructose corn syrup made with natural maple flavoring, you know, that kind of thing. Read the ingredients. Look at it and make sure it's 100% maple syrup, preferably in a glass container. But if not, you can get more in one of those, like the hard plastic jugs. That's perfect. That's what I actually get a lot of times too. And they have the different grades, you know, like grade A, grade B. Grade A is a lighter tasting maple syrup. They've just kind of extracted a little bit more of the maple compounds out of it. And then the grade B, they don't take a lot of those. This is just when they strain it. They don't strain all of the maple particles or the compounds out of it. So it makes a lighter tasting syrup with the grade A. So it doesn't have that strong maple flavor. Now the grade B has a fuller maple flavor because they don't cook all of the maple compounds out of it. So it has like a stronger maple flavor. I actually like that. I like the grade B. But depending on what you're making, you may not want that. So choose which one you like depending on your taste for the maple flavor. So that's pretty much all I have for you today. Those are the good and the bad sweeteners. Choose wisely, read labels, and don't just listen to what I say, y'all. Go out there and make it happen so that you are being more healthful even when you decide to make a dessert for you and your family. So with that, I give thanks to you again for listening in on Food for Medicine. I give thanks for, you know, the abilities or the opportunity to give you the information, because I'm so passionate about it. And with that, have a great weekend, a healthful weekend, and I will be here next week, same time, same place. Catch me then. Peace.